Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. You know, every now and then, we all may get into a bit of a rut on the job. Not being able to focus or connect with our tasks. But what happens when you are finding yourself less engaged with your job for perhaps longer periods of time? What's behind that? And what do you need to do to get back on track? Well, tonight we have a couple of experts to talk about this and share a few tips. My guests are Dr. Vanessa Weaver, career advisor and CEO of Alignment Strategies, and Charlene Willis, author and leadership coach, and of course you, the listener. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Vanessa, good to talk to you again.
It's great to see you.
I haven't seen you in Lord knows how long.
I know.
Right, I tell you.
Since the height of COVID.
How about
that? We've been on several shows, but it's all been remote, right?
It's good to be back in house.
It sure is.
And Ms. Willis, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Of course. I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Vanessa, let me first ask you about a working definition of engagement at work. I mean, what does that actually mean?
Well, engagement at work means when you have an employee or an employee workforce. Well, there are really three levels of it. But overall, it's the level of commitment and interest and motivation an employee has for the work they're doing and where they're working. And there are really three types of levels of engagement. One is the actively engaged, and that's that person that is just going over and beyond what is expected to help deliver a goal or a project. I mean, they're really pushing that boat, you know, they're really just giving it their all. And they're doing that, they're self-motivated, they're doing that really with their own motivation. And then there are the passively engaged folks. And those folks are the people that come to work, they do what they're supposed to do on their jobs, but that's pretty much all they do. They're going to do what they get paid to do. Keep the nose clean, but they're not trying to do anything more, anything less. And then it's the what we call actively disengaged employee, a person. And that's the person who really just doesn't like being there and many times can be a demotivator to their team or even a disruptor to the workforce. But it's just not, they're just not happy there. They're not wanting to be there. But they need a paycheck or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or maybe there's some other factors there.
Actively disengaged. That sounds like an oxymoron. I'm actively not here.
That's right.
It kind of sounds almost like that quiet quitting thing that we heard about earlier this year.
Yeah, it's a little bit like that, yeah. In fact, I think I did that show with you.
Yeah.
Except it's not quite so quiet, right?
Yeah.
I think when you're actively disengaged, you are actively trying to get others disengaged along with you.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That sounds like mutiny.
and sometimes it feels like that if you're, you know, trying to get your team to move forward and you got a person that's negative or just has a certain aura about them and it just affects the whole team's morale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that kind of happened with you, Ms. Willis, when you decided to leave your job, but you had a traumatic health event.
I did.
Which you were diagnosed with cancer. So unless you were not motivated before this serious health challenge, does it really apply to you? I mean, before you were diagnosed, were you disengaging?
Not at all. I would say before I was diagnosed, I was actively engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went out for treatment, I remained actively engaged. Mm-hmm. And my employer was so supportive. What happened with me was my cancer battle that was predicted to last 7 months ended up lasting nearly 5 years. And so my issue was a little bit different because when I came back to work, I was a different person. And so being actively engaged wasn't enough for me anymore. You know, being a Black female climbing the corporate ladder in an environment that wasn't made for me. You know, I had perfected, before I went out for work for cancer treatment, I had perfected how to be the perfect Black female executive. Mm. And what I found when I went back to work after being away for 5 years, you know, I had realized just how much I had given up of myself for work. Mm-hmm. So I didn't become actively disengaged. I became actively disinterested in being who I was. And I wanted to seek a different purpose, a different calling. I wanted to make an impact in a different way. And I knew, having been a leader, you know, in the C-suite for more than 20 years, I really felt strongly that, if this makes sense, I needed to leave I needed to leave so that I didn't leave before I left. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
You kind of retired on the job or kind of...
Right, yeah. Right. I wanted to go before I became actively disengaged.
And Charlene, you're making such a good point, because sometimes people assume that the actively disengaged person is just the person that just got there on their own. And sometimes... Right. You know, people become actively disengaged because it's just not a stimulating environment. They don't feel recognized or appreciated. There can be a lot of other factors that drive people to be actively engaged. In fact, the data says that the number one reason for people being actively disengaged is often the immediate supervisor. Now, that didn't sound like the case for you, Charlene. It seems like for you, you had different... you know, revelations about your life and the direction you wanted your life to go and where you want to put your energy. I wouldn't call that disengaged.
What I was going to say. I mean, you definitely had, you know, a traumatic event, you know, happen. And had this not happened to you, one could guess that you could still very well be, you know, on the job. By the way, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, how are you feeling?
Oh, I feel great. I feel great. You know, I thank you very much for asking. You know, I decided to de-stress my life and do something completely different than being a C-suite executive. And for me personally, at the time and now, that was the right move for me. Mm-hmm. You know, in many ways, I think that I experienced what a lot of people experienced during COVID. I just experienced it earlier. And what I mean by that is, you have a chance to get away and to take stock and say, what's important to me? What do I really want to be doing? What matters? What kind of impact do I want to have? And that then impacts your view on going back into the office, right? And I think that we're seeing that now. And of course, we're saying employees are disengaged, but I think a lot of this comes from, you know, the pandemic and having been away from work, and you're able to, once you're able to separate from being on that roller coaster or on that treadmill, then you have a different way of thinking. Mm-hmm. And you say, hey, wait a minute, you know, during the pandemic, when we were all forced to stay home, we realized what we were missing, right? Yeah. So when you're on that treadmill, you're not stopping to see what you're missing. Yeah. And I think I just experienced it from a different catalyst. A few years earlier.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about becoming disengaged at work. Are you finding that you are unable to focus, that you are losing connection with your job tasks? What can you do to get back on track? And perhaps indeed, what can your employer do to get you back on track? If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So Ms. Wheel, is, you know, Vanessa mentioned the pandemic. Mm-hmm. As we have seen, that was an event that has completely reshaped
absolutely
the workplace. We have employers who are doing hybrid. Mm-hmm. We have employers who are allowing their employees to work from home when they didn't before. Mm-hmm. But then you have others, for example, the mayor of the District of Columbia, Muriel Bowser, has been for the past couple of years talking about bringing people back, asking the federal government to come back. But even just last week, she said, we realize that that is not going to happen the way that that many of us had originally hoped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how, with that being the case, would you say that post-COVID people are more engaged, less engaged? Is it redefining work engagement?
Well, you know, it's interesting because when you look at the overall stats, and I would encourage our listeners to look up the gap study on the workplace, on the workforce. But the numbers really haven't changed in terms of actively engaged that much since pre-COVID. They were about 36% before COVID, and now they're around 34, 33%. And what's interesting, that number is not just true for the U.S., but it's also true globally. So this isn't just a phenomenon that's happening in the U.S., it's happening around the world. So if you have, say, 36% of your folks are really actively engaged, and you got about, what, 60-something percent that are, you know, either passively engaged or disengaged. So it really is a real issue, and it's costing American business $500 billion a year from employees being disengaged. I mean, it shows up in terms of increased safety incidents, lower productivity, increased absenteeism, and all of that. So it's a real issue. So it's not just about one or two people kind of, you know, feeling a little bit off, but it really is speaking to what does it take for us to have a workplace culture where people feel that they can be fully engaged and embraced in the workforce. What I really liked about what Charlene gave us as her example was sometimes we assume that we're disengaged because the company isn't doing something. But a percentage of us, and particularly as a result of COVID, had different revelations about what really mattered to us, what really excited us in terms of our profession and our careers, how we wanted to be treated. So we had this time. And not that we weren't working, but you had a little more time to explore what matters to you. Charlene had really obviously a life situation that forced more of that for her. But she talked about really getting in touch with what mattered to her, where she wanted to place her time and her values. And so some of this also occurred. But the big piece around COVID is that employees developed greater expectations around how they want to be treated, respected, recognized. You know, in the workplace, in a certain ways that supervisors might have been treating them, that they realized that they didn't want to live like that anymore. They didn't want to work.
They didn't think it was acceptable.
Acceptable anymore.
Yeah. Right.
And the data shows, too, that the number one contributor to employees being disengaged, and Charlene, I'm thinking you probably hear a lot of this in the coaching that you do, is the immediate supervisor. How they
Absolutely.
Either treat people well or they don't treat them well. And the difference is that people have found the courage and the voice to speak up more about that.
Let me go to the phone lines real quick. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Ronald calling from Upper Marlboro. Thanks for calling, Ronald. What's on your mind?
I think your guess is spot on. The workforce has changed dramatically since COVID. Mm-hmm. I'm an employer. And it's not a motivating factor for money anymore. It's just a different mindset now. You can't really motivate a person that doesn't want to be motivated. They kind of like doing their own thing now, working from home, respect. It's other things now other than money. I don't know how you turn that around.
Ronald, let me ask you this. How many people work for you?
I got 50.
You have 50 people working for you, so you are technically at the right at the precipice of small business and medium sized business. With this knowledge that the workplace culture is changing, what have you as an employer done to address it, or have you?
Well, we tend to keep the older workers, that's what we pay more attention to. The younger ones coming in, they have a different mindset than we had back in our day. The older ones are more settled, more calm. They seem to know what they want, where they're at. The young people that come in, they seem to be up in the air. You know, they have attitudes. It's just a lot of stuff they don't take anymore. So it's a different culture now. It's changed 180 degrees.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ronald, thank you so much for your phone call. Real quick, before I go to a break, Ms. Wheelis, did you notice that you were less engaged or disengaged when you came back? And what was that like? You've got about 30 seconds and we'll continue on the other side.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that I noticed that I was more disengaged. I just noticed that this wasn't what I wanted to do anymore. It didn't fit anymore. I had been, if you will, in air quotes, playing the game for 30 years, and I'd had a life event, and I didn't want to play that game anymore.
Interesting. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about being less engaged on your job, losing focus, not connecting. What does that mean? How can you reconnect? Do you need to make a change? Does your job need to make a change? We are talking about this issue. Constance calling from Maryland. Don't hang up. We're going to be talking to you next, so stay with us. We are going to take a break, but don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. And don't forget, you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We'll be back on Sirius XM Channel 141 in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are talking about becoming less engaged on your job. Do you feel that that is happening to you? Do you find yourself not quite focusing the way that you used to, not quite connecting, not quite having the enthusiasm for the job that you love? What do you do about that? We are talking about it. My guests are Dr. Vanessa Weaver, career advisor and CEO of Alignment Strategies, and Charlene Wheelis, author and leadership coach. Lines are open to 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Constance calling from Maryland. Constance, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
So I have a question, or let me say, I'm going to make a statement rather. My situation is, I guess, based on it's about being engaged or starting out being engaged and now becoming disengaged. And part of my issue is I am in a situation where I'm very skilled on my job. I have a new manager who did not come in at the skill level that I had, and I have been pretty much training her in her position. And now I feel like there is a little bit of discomfort on her behalf in terms of where she stands in terms of her being my immediate supervisor. So just different actions and the attitude that she's taken about things lately has made me feel like I need to kind of disengage in this situation. Mm-hmm. How do you handle that?
Vanessa, your thoughts about that?
Well, Constance, excuse me. I don't know if you go by Connie or Constance.
You got real familiar really quick.
I'm telling you. I'm so used to Constance being Connie. But Constance, I mean, it's an interesting situation. And I tell you, a lot of times, we're required or asked to train our supervisors because you were hiring people, particularly in this world where this period where people are leaving and it's under, we don't have the kind of a resource or skilled workforce that we need. And so someone like you who's skilled or you know, you're being asked to train this person to sound like you did it. And now she's seemingly insecure about that. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah.
And yeah. So that's making you feel less engaged or kind of turned off, it sounds like.
I'm kind of turned off because she still doesn't quite, she is still trying to catch up to where I am.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's more of, how does she supervise me? How does she manage me? And it's like you've let the genie out the bottle. You can't ask me to now almost acquiesce because she now needs to take on this role, and you've allowed me to self-manage
mm-hmm.
myself for a number of months, and now you want to dictate and determine what I do, how I do, via email, and still at the same time need my assistance and guidance in helping you with certain things.
Yeah, I can see why that would make you feel less engaged. Have you had an opportunity, Constance, to talk to her about this in terms of how you're experiencing this control she's trying to place on you now? And it sounds like a lack of recognition of the role that you played in bringing her up to speed and really helping her, you know, become proficient in her job.
Well, the interesting thing is I have a performance evaluation, a mid-year evaluation that she's going to have to do. And I'm in my head about how do you do a midterm evaluation on a person who has taught you or pretty much, you know, guided you in your current position. How do you tell me where I need to improve if I've been the person who's been walking you through this role?
Well, have you had an opportunity to do your own evaluation?
Yeah, I have to do mine, part of mine when I sit with her.
Okay. And so can that, in fact, be what you lead with in terms of what you feel have been your contributions and how important it's been to keep the organization moving?
Yeah, it can be, and it will be, but I'm still in a situation of she still has to be able to tell me where she feels I'm going to need to improve. And I don't know how I necessarily feel like I want to respond to that because I know where I've carried and I'm still carrying. So I'm not quite sure. What do you do in this situation?
Can I jump in here?
Sure,
for a minute?
Real quick, go ahead.
So Constance, have you ever heard of the term going from pet to threat?
Say that again, going from what to what?
Have you heard of the term going from pet to threat?
No, I haven't heard that before.
Okay.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, and so what it means is basically is when you start out, you are the darling because they need you. And they
mm-hmm.
need you to be able to help to help your boss or whoever it is because you mm-hmm. have the knowledge. Well, once you have transferred that knowledge, right, you have now become a threat to your supervisor,
okay.
right? Because you know more than she does, she or he does, and that person knows it as well, right? So so in going in and talking to that person with that your supervisor, recognize that that person may see you as a threat now. So you want to go in and take away that threat piece and saying, basically, look, I'm here to help you succeed. You know,
mm-hmm.
and what is the best way for us to move forward in doing that if you feel that you have that kind of relationship, you know,
okay.
and do what I call read the room with him or her,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
If they're the type of person that feels threatened and so they're going to move everything out of the way that threatens them, then that's a signal to you that, okay, if you love the company that you're in, start looking about where you can move in that company so that you don't allow someone else to ruin your reputation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Well, Constance, good luck to you, and thank you so much for your phone call.
Mm-hmm.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about your career, your job. Are you finding that you're feeling less engaged, less focused, less connected to the task at hand on your job and what you need to do to get back on track?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Vanessa, I want to kind of paint this portrait, and I think this is applicable to Ms. Wheelis, but I think it's also applicable to a lot of other people where, for example, in Ms. Wheelis's case, you on point all the time, doing the job, doing it well, being rewarded for doing the same job, growing in the job, and and finding admiration from your peers. But at some point when you find yourself to be less engaged, what is the cure for this quote unquote less engaged illness? Does that mean that you do what Ms. Willis did, which was leave the job? Or do you find re-engagement by taking on another position, if available, on the same job?
Well, what I heard Ms. Willis said, which I thought was just so insightful, is that she, not only had she been performing well, but she'd also been wearing this mask of being the perfect black female. You know, that this was
a
persona.
That's another show.
But I know, because like I said,
this applies to a whole lot of black women, lot of black men working in that space. But no, please.
But the point is, she had several points of revelation in terms of her own, seeking her own truth about what mattered for her. And I think that's important. When you are feeling disengaged, you need to sort out how much of that is your stuff versus the organization versus your supervisor. And then once you identify your truth, then create a game plan around how you want to change that.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Ms. Willis?
Yeah, I tend to look at it from the standpoint of kind of the four L's, I call it. What do you love? What do you loathe? What do you long for? And what do you lust for? And what I mean by that is, in the job that you're in, when you start to feel disengaged, think about what is it that you love about your job, right? That just gets you excited. What do you completely dislike? What do you loathe about your job? And can you offload those? Is it something that you can stop doing for a couple of weeks and no one notices? And then you take that to your supervisor and say, hey, I don't think this is bringing any value. You know, what do you long for? Meaning it's something that you've done before, but you no longer do anymore. Maybe you want that back. You know, that's how you're going to get your groove back. And then what do you lust for? Meaning what is that next challenge that you want to go after? But I think when you find that you are in a state of disengagement, it is your responsibility to get back that engagement. And that's not to say that your employer, your supervisor doesn't have a role, because they do. And that really is to open the doors for you, because no one can help you get, people can help you get disengaged, but it's very hard for other people to get you to re-engage. You have to do that for yourself. And I think that really takes some self-inflection.
Well, you know,
that, I was going to say that. Yeah. That sounds like a really difficult thing to re-engage.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth in what she says. But in the work that our company does in Alignment Strategies, we work with organizations around what are the things that leadership and supervisors can do to create and drive more engagement. For example, you know, providing recognition to their employees. There are things that they can do that could help stimulate the engagement, provide recognition, provide feedback, have conversations with the employees around what they love and loathe and long for and lust for, you know, to engage in those kind of discussions. Make a connection with people that work for you, that work directly for you. And we find that particularly with frontline employees, many of the supervisors don't have these kinds of conversations with people. So if they feel like they are just there and people don't see them, they don't matter. And so we've done interventions with organizations or initiatives with organizations where we train supervisors how to connect with people, how to drive more engagement, how to have those kind of conversations with their employees so that they know what their employees care about. Many times supervisors don't even know what matters to their employees. And so there are simple things that organizations can do to train groups of supervisors and groups of leadership around how to have a more engaged culture.
But why don't they know? Are they so focused on the bottom line that they are ignoring the, you know, the rank and file employees, and I don't mean in a way that is malicious.
Yeah. Well, sometimes they don't know what they don't know, and organizations have not always invested the time and resources to upskill these supervisors on how they can be an effective supervisor. Typically, people get promoted because they're good at a particular task, around getting a widget made or getting a process moved through the organization. They're not always promoted, very rarely, on how well they motivate people to work and be in teams. And so organizations have not always invested the resources, training, time to really upskill people on how they do this. And as a result of COVID now, organizations are recognizing, you know, we got to do something about this. In 2021, where there were 41 million people that left their jobs. Yeah. 41 million people.
And didn't go back.
And, yeah. and the organizations didn't know that they were going to have this kind of tsunami occurring. And so now many of them are saying, what kind of culture do we need to create so that we don't have this kind of massive turnover? I mean, turnover last year cost American business over $1 trillion. Turnover.
Ms. Wheelis, you said something that struck me, and I want to go back to what you were talking about being the best black woman executive that
I
you could
I thought you didn't want to talk about that.
We can, but this is, and this is why, and we'll bring you back for the next show on the, you know, black in the C-suite, but, and Vanessa too, but... You said that you were the best black woman executive that you could be, but then, of course, because of this traumatic health event, you became disengaged. Would you say that the C-suite changed you or that you changed the C-suite?
Oh boy, isn't that a question?
Yeah, it is.
You know, so my mantra in life is it's choice, not chance, that changes everything, and choose before chance takes over. And I would say that I have done that most of my career, except when I realized that if I became who the proverbial they said I needed to be, that I would be successful, and I was right. And I became that perfect black female executive. I knew how to speak up, but not too loudly, right? Mm-hmm. Stand out, but don't stand out too much, but be sure to stand out when they need you to stand out, right? And so I had perfected the hypervigilance that was required in order to be successful. And I tell you, I was killing it. I was at the top of my game. I was killing it until I realized it was actually killing me. And that's when I got sick and had to make a different decision. But, you know, I will say that, you know, I think that the way the workforce is today, and I think that the pandemic didn't create a whole new work environment. I think it set up something that was already coming.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at Gen X and Gen Zs and millennials, all of the things that now the baby boomers are saying we want are the things that the Gen X, the Gen Z, and millennials will only work under, meaning the flexibility, you know, and the supervisors and employers who care, right? It goes back to that. We don't care how much you know until we know how much you care.
Yeah. Charlene, you make such a good point, because a lot of times people say millennials are a problem, or they have an attitude. I think our caller earlier said that the millennials have an attitude.
They're built differently.
Yeah, they are built. But they brought a truth and a reality to the workplace.
Right.
And they respect the hierarchy, that's all it is. And they push the conversation. You know, they are used to being able to have these kind of conversations with their parents and with other adults. So why can't they bring it in, have conversations like this in the workplace?
Absolutely.
And I think we benefited from that. I think we benefited.
Remember when you were a kid? You remember when you were a kid and your mother and your parents would say, "Because I said so."
Yes.
Right. And so you went into the workplace as a baby boomer, and the boss would say, "It's because I said so."
Yeah.
And so you did it. And with the Gen X, the Gen Z, and millennials, I've raised a Gen Zer and a millennial. You know, well, we never said because I said so.
Yeah.
Right?
and now with the millennial being the largest segment in the workforce.
Right.
You know, now
right.
they are the majority, and mm-hmm. the number is growing. It's mm-hmm. not getting.
Right.
And
but I
so,
think they're going to get their comeuppance. Let me.
Wait till their parents.
Yeah, wait.
Right?
Yeah, right. Right, right, exactly. When they really start running the show, then there will be another alphabet to challenge
right.
them. I have no doubt.
Well, you need to have some millennials on this show to have them have a conversation.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
You know, but I do think that we are now in an era where people expect their leaders to lead with humanity, empathy, mm-hmm. and compassion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
if those three things are missing, people are making another choice.
Yeah.
A choice because they don't want to give their discretionary time just to build the bottom line of revenue and profits for somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, they want to make an impact. They want to know they're working toward a purpose and that it matters. And they want to be seen.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jerry calling from Gaithersburg. Jerry, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Jerry, are you there? Jerry, give me a call back if you can. So what do you believe is the prescription for re-engagement? You know, because Vanessa, you may not be able to change your boss,
mm-hmm.
okay? And short of leaving, which is an option, as we've seen in the case of Miss Wheelis, but if you want to stay, how do you re-engage? And, you know, sometimes a vacation may help.
Yeah, sometimes
I mean,
break,
really,
yeah.
I mean, you know, but, take some days off, but beyond that.
What we found that's been extremely helpful is for individuals to engage in what we call meaningful conversations, to really sit down with the supervisor. And Charlene talked a little bit about this, to say, look, we're both here, and I'm committed to making this organization successful, being successful, you know, supporting you and being successful. So we need to talk about expectations. You know, what is it that really you're looking for from me? What am I looking and needing from you to really kind of go back and reset and level set expectations with each other and get some kind of calibration around, is that possible? You know, kind of test what's possible by having that straight conversation.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Wheelis, your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, which is in a different way, which is just around communication. I think that as employees, we have to be comfortable with communicating with our supervisors and telling them what we need. And as leaders, we have to be comfortable with asking the question and accepting the answer. You know, because I think the contract between employer and employee has changed. And if you're disengaged and you want to be engaged again, it's a matter of letting people understand what you need and giving them the option and the room to provide that for you.
Mm-hmm.
And leaders have to be open, right? They have to be open to, you can't ask for feedback and then ignore it.
Correct.
Right? You're creating a worse situation.
I think organizations
have to be open to hearing it.
I agree. And I think organizations have to make a broad investment and upskilling their supervisors to really encourage these kind of real conversations.
What does that investment look like, though?
Well, that investment looks like making a commitment financially to say we're going to train our supervisors on how to have real conversations with people,
right.
Not just conversations mm-hmm. where you dictate time and schedule and budget, but how do you really engage in a real conversation? We've had clients mm-hmm. who have actually, you know, committed those kinds of funds and resources to train like mid-level supervisors and first-level supervisors, and they have had significant impact when they've done that. One of our clients started an engagement initiative. We created with them an engagement initiative, and they got their employees involved in solving problems that were bugging the employees every day, and it turned out to save them $20 million in cost savings in 6 months. Those employees had ideas and solutions around what the organization should be doing. The organization never asked them, didn't mm-hmm. listen to them, didn't consider that they had the aptitude to really solve these problems, because the culture was all of the decisions and problem solving was from the top down. When the employees at the bottom who are living with this every day have solutions and approaches and techniques that can solve a whole lot of problems that are getting on their nerves, but nobody ever asks them. So they go home with solutions that the organization can't even benefit from.
But so many businesses, when you talk about training and fixing problems, even in corporate America, mm-hmm. a lot of these problems are not yoga, you know, repetitive, holistic. These things cost money.
Yeah, but
that a lot of these employers say they don't have.
Yeah, but it's the solutions. Right. I mean, what I'm asking for when you talk about when you ask employees, what if there's one thing we could do that could make you feel more excited about coming to work every day, what would that be from your perspective? Mm-hmm. Not from somebody who's four or five levels up, but from your perspective. We had one employee, a group of employees said, you know what, if you could just get us the equipment that we need these kits with asbestos strips, not all this other stuff that you've ordered. We need kits with some asbestos strips, enough of them so when we go out on our jobs, we have the tools to do our job. That's what we want. And the supervisor said, really, that's what you need? That would make us very happy because we don't like going on these jobs and we don't have what we need. Mm-hmm. So nobody ever asked them. They did that, saved that employer $10 million. Why? Because they were ordering kits and supplies that they didn't need, and what the employees needed were asbestos strips, more of them. Mm-hmm. You know, and that made them feel like, number one, that they had a voice, that they were heard, mm-hmm. that they were valued. You know, what they needed was valued by the media supervisors, that the organization made an effort to get them what they needed. It just had a tremendous ripple effect. So it's not just give me yoga, give me Monday off, and you know some of the stuff that you hear. But most employees are saying there are some fundamental things that if you just could provide for me that, it would make my life easier.
Right, and I would add into that, and it won't surprise you since I'm a leadership coach, but I believe in coaching. You know, mm-hmm. your leaders, because we're talking also about behavior change in the way that the leaders treat people. And to Dr. Vanessa's point, a lot of leaders are in the roles they're in because they had good technical skills, mm-hmm. not because they had good people skills or what we used to call the soft skills. Mm-hmm. And so I believe employers need to invest in helping their employees to get those soft skills. And yes, that's training, but I also think that if you're going to change behavior, you need a lot of one-on-one work.
Yeah.
And it's expensive, but it's not as expensive as having to replace all these employees.
I'm telling you.
Because you're not providing.
Ms. Wheelis, when you left.
Yes.
You came back, and when you came back, you said to yourself, okay, this is not it for me anymore. What kind of conversation did you have with your employer prior to leaving? Or was this something that you considered internal work, navel gazing, and did not share this thought process with them?
Well, you know, it's so much more complicated because there was a life-altering event that happened for me. But it was a lot of me trying to come back as the person I had been when I left and realizing that I was no longer that person.
Mm-hmm.
And so being an executive, coming back into an executive role, I really felt that there was just a better way for me to make a difference for people than in the role that I was in. And in order to do that, I needed to leave my role.
But did you talk to them about it at all? I mean, was there a conversation?
I had one conversation, and it was, it's time for me to go.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, I will say that something that I talk about frequently is what leaders need to do to be able to help employees who have been sick or who have experienced something integrate back into the workforce. Because we don't spend enough time giving that thought.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that had I had that kind of an environment and those conversations, I might not have left. I might have done what I still do as a side hustle, but they would not have lost an executive that they had spent 10 years investing in.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I always wondered what the C-suite definition of side hustle was.
So- Well, that's a great question.
Corporate consulting.
maybe I would have just written the book and left it at that.
Right, exactly. I have a few minutes left, but as we look at the landscape of the work world now, Vanessa, and see how much it has changed in a relatively short period of time. For all of the people who are thinking about doing a Charlene Wheelis, you know, health notwithstanding, mm-hmm. how would you advise them before they make their first steps?
Before they make their first steps to leave,
to leave or to make a significant change to engage.
Well, you know, I love Charlene's model where she talked about love, loathe, what you long for, and you know, what you lust for. I mean, really taking some time to do that introspection yourself to determine, is this a me issue that it's just time for me to just kind of do something different? Are there things that the organization needs to do? My supervisor needs to do differently with me? You know, for Constance, you know, she talked about the fact that the organization asked her to train up her new supervisor, and now she's dealing with a supervisor who's feeling threatened by her. So for people to really make that kind of determination for themselves and then create, okay, what is my strategy or my game plan? Should I be having direct conversations with my supervisor? Should I be thinking of a backup game plan, like a side hustle that Charlene talked about? You know, what is it that I need to do to prepare myself for one option or the other?
Yeah, I think that's a good place to end this conversation. I got a text from a colleague in the business who was saying that this conversation was so good that she couldn't get out of her car.
Wow.
And I know she, you know, in her business, she is the, you know, the top-notch Charlene Wheelis before leaving. And so and she's still hanging in there doing the daggone thing. So I hope that the advice that we've heard tonight will help a lot of people out there. Dr. Vanessa Wheeler, Charlene Wheelis, thank you both for talking to us.
And that's Weaver.
Thank you.
Oh, did I say Wheelis too?
Yeah, we had two Wheelis.
We had two Wheelis, you know, sisters in the corporate culture.
I'm telling you.
Dr. Vanessa Weaver and Charlene Wheelis. Thank you both for talking to us. I appreciate it. That is the Daily
Bye-bye,
Drum
Charlene.
For this Tuesday, May 30th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.